Shadows.
Your weekly 15 minutes with Abroad, Her Bud, and the Bard.
I'm Mike.
And I'm Danny.
Today is the climactic Act 5, Scene 3, The Banquet.
When we last left our heroes, Lucius the Elder was poised at the gates of Rome with his Goth army ready to come into Titus's estate to parley with Saturninus and Tamora. Titus had invited everybody over to dinner, and everybody was coming except for Chiron and Demetrius, who were somehow absent. But guess what? He baked them into pies, unbeknownst to anybody but Lavinia.
And she's not saying anything.
Nope.
So scene three opens with Lucius the Elder making plans with his men to prevent any potential ambush by Saturninus. They've arrived at the Andronicus estate first, and Lucius wants to make sure that there is no double dealing going on. Shortly after that, Saturninus arrives with all the Roman court. There is a brief exchange of pleasantries. It appears, at least at the outset, that both parties have arrived in good faith, and they sit down at the Andronicus dinner table. Next to enter is Titus. And at this point, Titus is back to displaying some of his trademark potential madness.
He comes in dressed as a cook, which, if you see this in performance, is hysterical because they always dress him to the nines with a big poofy chef hat and an apron that usually says something ridiculous on it.
So no matter what setting it's in, he comes in dressed like the stereotypical French cook.
Pretty much, actually. I saw this done in the no theater style, so it was all Japanese up, and he came in like a French chef.
That's hysterical. Titus displays even more out-of-character behavior by serving the food and encouraging all within all at the table to eat up, stepping into the role of the servant as opposed to being the lord of the house. After the dinner begins, Titus then turns to Saturninus and poses a hypothetical question to him and asks the emperor to give advice as to whether or not, or whether it's right for a father to kill a daughter who has been raped. Saturninus replies to this supposed hypothetical question by saying, yes, it is right to for a father to basically put his daughter out of misery. In response to this advice, Titus shockingly kills Lavinia immediately.
And when you see this done in performance, it is a shock. You kind of see it coming because you know what's going on, but at the same time, you're like, is he really just gonna do it? And he does, and usually it's something very sharp, very fast, so he'll smother her with his hand, or he'll snap her neck, or something like that.
And it's kind of interesting, every time I've seen this done, it still comes as a shock, even though in Act 1, Titus didn't hesitate to kill one of his own sons when he stood in the way of rightful Roman law. So while this shouldn't be surprising, it still very much is shocking and surprising. And speaking of shocked, Saturninus, shocked, asked Titus, what are you doing? And at this point, Titus lays it all bare upon the table and describes the assault upon Lavinia and names the two assailants. The emperor, probably angry that two Goths that he has given hospitality to assaulted a Roman citizen, and as we've said in the play before, someone who represents the body politic, orders that Chiron and Demetrius be seized immediately and delivered to him.
But hey, guess what? They're already at the table.
Yes, and Titus reveals that Tamora, who is all throughout this entire exchange, has been sitting back, eating her meal, enjoying watching the Roman political body collapse, has been eating her own two sons that Titus served to her.
And fun fact, Shakespeare scholar Marjorie Garber claims that watching this scene in the Tamora film was what made her a vegetarian.
That's pretty funny, actually.
Yeah.
At this revelation, Titus then turns and kills Tamora. And this starts a quick sequence of bloody, brutal murders in the Andronicus household.
It's like Roman dominoes.
Right after Titus kills Tamora, Saturninus just responds to the brutal murder and assault upon his empress by killing Titus. Lucius then responds to the brutal murder of his father by killing the Emperor.
And it's pretty funny to read in the script because it literally just says, he stabs him, he stabs him, he stabs him. And you're sitting there like, what? Okay, I guess we're doing this.
And most performances attempt to present this in a quick bang, bang, stab, stab after stab, or attack after attack fashion. It's supposed to be quick and brutal and chaotic. Because as these murders are just going back and forth, the rest of the court is watching in shock and awe.
It's like Wimbledon, but better.
It's very bloody Wimbledon.
Strawberries and cream, blood and pie, you know.
After Lucius kills Saturninus, the bloodshed stops. And Marcus, being Johnny on the spot, realizes that there's a huge power vacuum now. And steps in and proclaims Lucius the Elder as emperor. And the rest of the court jumps on the bandwagon at this point because Lucius is really the only potential candidate. He's got the army sitting at the Roman gates. He more than likely has popular support. And after the Saturninus and Tamara debacle, most of the court is willing to throw in with Lucius because he seems to be a stable leader.
Well, and if you recall all the way back to the beginning of the play, the three people who were up for the position were Bassianus, Saturninus, and Titus. So by process of righteous elimination, Lucius is the only one left with any claim on this old stake.
Yep, he is the one heir that is left because any potential heir that came from Saturninus has been discredited. Lucius graciously accepts the title of emperor. And then we enter the epilogue. Aaron is brought in for punishment at this point. There is some back and forth between Aaron and Lucius, and Aaron once again proves that he is not sorry whatsoever at the actions he's taking. He's actually even more defiant than he was before.
Oh yeah, he's like, I would do it 10 times over.
Yeah, he's in fact sorry that he was not able to do more. And Lucius finally pronounces sentence upon Aaron and has him buried up to his neck alive and has him left to starve to death. Lucius then orders Saturninus to be buried with his family with all honors. This is not atypical for what he would have done. Lucius is respecting the office here because treating Saturninus with respect here is also treating his own position now with respect. Even though that Saturninus was one of the instruments to his family's near downfall, he needs to respect the position of emperor. Because now he's emperor, he wants others to view him with the same. He then orders the rest of his family to be buried within the Andronicus tomb with honors, both Titus and Lavinia. And Tamara's body he has tossed to the wolves.
Literally. Now, and then the play ends. Ta-da! No, this last scene is actually hilarious if it's done properly, because thing one, Titus is completely mad, or at least acting completely mad. And then the other thing is, you see murder after murder after murder, and eventually it's just funny. Like, people falling down. It's funny.
It does come off as almost as if Domino was falling.
And then you're left at this point with a stage full of bodies, which can be solved in one of two ways. Thing one, the bodies get up, dispose of themselves, you know, end of play, whatever. Thing two, you tag on the traditional jig. Now, at the end of every show that would have happened at Shakespeare's Globe, the actors would come out and dance a jig. Now, this is comedy.
Wait, is this kind of like the ending of a Bollywood movie?
Yeah, kind of, actually. This is for comedy or tragedy, and remember, there was no electricity in Shakespeare's Globe, so it's not like they could dim the lights. No, the bodies would just get up, and then the actors would dance in whatever they were wearing. And they still do this at the Globe if you go to this day. So, you might see a traditional production of Titus where everything happens, sad, 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 death, blood, and destruction, then everybody gets up and dances. Pretty spectacular.
That's hysterical.
Now, the traditional ending of Titus is young Lucius walks off with Aaron's child, because we have this, you know, baby that's still...
We have the one unanswered question as to what happened to Aaron's baby. And is that addressed in the folio?
It's not addressed in the folio, which is why I think directors tend to have young Lucius walk off with the child, because they want this image of hope and the next generation and what's going to happen and the melding of the families. And of course, that's how Tamar did it, so that's how everyone does it now. So what were your overall impressions of this show?
Given that this is one of his earlier plays, I actually really liked it. My biggest problems with some of his later stuff is that he throws in so many plots that certain things can certainly drag. Whereas this play is very, very tight. It's actually almost closer than his other stuff to the more modern three-act structure that we see in movies and television and in other forms of entertainment that we have nowadays. It's a very, very tight play. It has one focused plot line that everything dovetails into at the end. And the play ends, the last scene, is truly the climax of the main plot line. Whereas in some of his other plays, you can have plot lines climax in Act 4 and still have a whole nother act to go before the end of the play.
It also, like I set up in the first episode, works to introduce some of the strong themes we're going to see again and again in the canon, including the strong female lead, so we'll see the Tamar character again, and people like Volumnia and Gertrude. And then, of course, we have the Aaron villain-type character who has reasons but not reasons for doing what he does.
So I really liked it. However, I know people have been critical of the play in the past.
Oh my god. People have been critical of this play since it was first performed in Shakespeare's Globe. It was very popular at the time, and we know that because of the number of publications that it saw. But in the 18th century, which was the great resurgence of Shakespeare, we have Dr. Sam Johnson saying, this is a quote, he says, "The barbarity of the spectacles and the general massacre which are here exhibited can scarcely be conceived tolerable to any audience." It was good old Sam's opinion that Shakespeare couldn't have possibly written this play.
Which is kind of strange given some of the other revenge tragedies that were going on at the time that this was written and performed. There were plays that were may not have been as bloody, but were pretty close.
Well, you have to understand, the 18th century was the first time when we were seeing the real bardification of Shakespeare, so he was a deity. So a lot of the text that was going on, the mythos they were creating surrounding Shakespeare, was about how he was the pinnacle of Englishness, the pinnacle of being an awesome writer. So the plays that they saw as subpar or subhuman or offensive to good taste clearly could not have been written by Shakespeare.
Clearly.
T.S. Eliot says that Titus was one of the stupidest and most uninspired plays ever written. Also a direct quote. And in recent years, the Julie Taymor film has undergone criticism for its graphic nature and seemingly senseless violence, which, as you know, came straight from Shakespeare.
Yeah, that's actually a really, really unfair criticism. Yeah, I think you can criticize the film for other reasons. And it's actually not a bad film. It's a good way to digest the play if you're interested in seeing it.
If you can palate Julie Taymor.
Well, yes. There's some artsiness in there that I found kind of interesting in a not so interesting way, but it's still a fairly tight film, and I think it communicates the play fairly well.
And then contemporary scholar Harold Bloom says, except for the hilarious Aaron the Moor, Titus Andronicus is ghastly bad if you take it straight. So he's lobbying for a sort of farcical reading of this production.
Which I think would be unfair. I mean, I think when I said in the first episode that there's some Tarantino-esque aspects to the play, I think that's actually not unfair. It's a very brutal play. It is uncompromising in the violence and in the action on the stage, but I don't think that should be held against it.
I agree.
So as we said before, you actually don't see Titus perform very often because of some of the stage limitations of the play. But it does have a fairly decent history behind it.
Yeah, there's a famous Peter Brooks production from 1955, and that was really the first to do stylized gore. So instead of actual pig's blood and bladders, he had red ribbons and that sort of thing. And you see that a lot in modern productions. You either see that sort of stylized gore or a Titus all in white with red stage blood everywhere by the end of it. If I see another white Titus, I'm going to go mad.
So if you want to see it now, though, I think the first place we might suggest is that is, as we mentioned before, the Julie Taymor film from 1999.
Yeah, like I said, it's got some Taymor-esque qualities if you can deal with the artier-than-thou portion of it and the rampant rewriting of the text. It's not a bad introduction. There's also a 1999 film directed by Christopher Dunn called Titus Andronicus, and they did it horror style. It was this low-budget B-film. Good luck getting your hands on it. Then there's the 1985 BBC version directed by Jane Howell, which is part of the BBC series. They did the whole canon. So if you ever want to see a Shakespeare show, you can go find one of the BBC versions.
And that one's probably pretty faithful to the text.
Usually they are. I haven't actually seen this particular one, and the BBC versions are hit or miss, so it might or might not be good.
And that's it for The Lamentable Tragedy of Titus Andronicus.
Yay!
I think next week we'll be moving on to one of the comedies, Two Gentlemen of Verona.
That leads into a giant tangent about the 18th century.
What, you can't sum that up in like a sentence or two?